The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. She's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen a better stew. Oh, Betty and the Jets.
Hello and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. In this episode, we have stories about stray wee-wees, breastfeeding, wagon trains, ghosts, and gargoyles. The music for this episode I recorded in an old church in Tübingen, Germany, and I happened to walk into this pretty old church, and I'm not sure if it was organ practice or they were auditioning a new organist, but it was just me in an old church with organ music. Let's get on with the show. Two episodes ago, I was talking about how I was at the airport hours and hours and hours for work, and I'm sitting next to another girl, and she casually mentioned that she wanted to invest in the stock market in pot. And my little brain went ding, 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 ding. I said, ooh, 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 I want to invest in pot. So I sat there at the company computer for like 3-4 hours Googling cannabis, marijuana, investing in marijuana. And I was joking with everyone around saying, I bet you I'm going to get drug tested. You know, all companies monitor employees on company computers. And I'm sure there are certain buzzwords. You know, they're looking for certain things, you know, illegal things and pornography, drugs. And I was sure that I was going to be setting off some buzzer somewhere. And I was surprised the next few trips that I didn't get drug tested. Well, you know, it's a big company. There's, I don't even know how many thousands and thousands and thousands of employees. So maybe it takes them a little longer. But sure enough, on my last London trip, I get the message in the cockpit that I'm getting drug tested. And the curious part is that it was just me. And in general, when you get drug tested on an international trip, because they have to send who we affectionately call Mr. Peabody or Mrs. Peabody. I know it's juvenile since they're asking us to pee for them, but that's what we call them, Mr. Peabody. In general, when they send Mr. Peabody, because he's got to come all the way to the international concourse, you know, waiting for us to come out of customs, just in an effort of efficiency, they usually drug test 2 or 3 crew members, you know, to save Mr. Peabody extra trips. But not in this case. Nope, just me. Just moi, because I'm sure that nobody else on my crew had been Googling marijuana and cannabis for hours on the company computer. So you know what? It's just what I get. But at least, hey, I was expecting it.
Because there was a lady on the airplane, babe, breastfeeding her kitten. I said, what the hell are you talking about? He goes, yeah. He goes, she had the people were ringing her call button, and he goes, I went up there, and I said, what's going on? And they go, look at her. She's breastfeeding his cat. And he goes, oh, ma'am, you can't do that. She goes, oh, he's hungry. And so he says, I've got to go call a flight in charge. I'm not playing this game. She went up there. He went up there, and she told him, she goes, oh, well, you got to, we can't do that. And he goes, he was standing to the side. Flight attendant came back and said, you cannot breastfeed your cat on the airplane. And because he had to write all this up. And he and she says, "Oh, it's my baby." He goes, "That ain't no damn baby. That's a kitty cat." I thought I was going to die the way he talks. Because he says, "That ain't no damn baby. That's a kitty cat. You need to put that thing away." And I was like,
so I was just flying with a girl who does a lot of traveling, and I know that you guys probably think that we all do a lot of traveling, but it's not the case, and you start to get to know the other wanderers, and I've flown with her before, and I asked her, "Oh, so where are you going next?" And she said she was going on African safari in Kenya, and I was saying, "Oh, I'm jealous, you know, there's really nothing better than an African safari," and we were just chatting, and lots of times I just try to think up something, you know, that might be useful to someone. And I said, when you're staying in like a safari tent camp or a lodge, I said, don't be surprised, because I literally screamed. I had no idea. You know, you're on safari, you're looking for exotic animals, you know, you're in like animal mode, and you're in a tent. And I went to get in my bed in my tent, and there was something in it, something hot, and I thought it was an animal. I screamed, I jumped out of bed. And then I realized they're being so civilized and so welcoming that they put a hot water bottle in your bed before you go to bed to warm up the bed at night. And how nice is that? But you know, when you're not expecting, you don't expect something hot. You know, blood temperature in your bed. And she was like, "Oh, well, I'm glad you told me that. I probably would have screamed too."
In New Orleans, very young, 3 months, really cute. And there's this redheaded guy in the back. He got on. He had long red hair. He had a big old bushy beard, tank top, cut off shorts. We're doing our beverage cart. We go to the back. I look over there. He had his dick laid out on the tray table. Oh, yes, he did. I looked at the other flight attendant. We both left. She went one way. I went to the front. We left the beverage cart sitting right there. And I told the flight attendant in charge, I said, "There's a man back there with his wee-wee hanging on the tray table." She goes, "Well, you need to go tell him to put it back in." I went, and she goes, "You're the most junior girl. Go tell him to put it back in." So I looked over there, and he's all strung out off of Bourbon Street. I looked at him. I said, "Sir, you need to put that away." He goes, oh, okay. He fumbles and tries to stick it back in his pants. He goes, "I need some help." I said, "That's not for me. That's for that flight attendant back there."
This next story I've had for quite a few months, but I wasn't quite sure what to do with it until I got an email from a new listener named Kathy, and she sent me a clip of Louis C.K. on Conan. You know, I wasn't that familiar with Louis C.K., but this clip is hilarious, and it goes really well with this other story, because they both sort of remind us how we tend to focus on the inconvenience of air travel. But if you really think about it, air travel is actually like the ultimate convenience, especially if you consider air travel as compared to other forms of transportation like buses or wagon trains.
It's a personal trip for me from Paris to New York. And so I was in business class, and everything was fine.
On the 11th.
Everything was fine and everything, and then suddenly about halfway, I would say about over Greenland or something like that, we did an 180 degree turn. And then I thought, whoa, what's going on?
We notice, you know.
Yeah, but you know, you have to put back yourself back, like, okay, you have no idea.
Right, no.
And so then I'm thinking, well, what's going on? And so about 5 minutes later, which seems very long, the cockpit crew said, for unforeseen circumstances in the United States, we have to go back to Paris.
Wow.
And so there was other friends of mine who were as well in the cabin. And I looked at them and I thought, well, it's either maybe a bomb, or there's something That was my first thought, really, a bomb. Other than that, thinking, well, something really happened in the United States, but it's like, what can be so bad, you know? And so I started looking really closely at the working crew to see if they seemed nervous, if they were taking any books or whatever. So they were not. Everything was like smooth and everything, and they would keep on serving. And then they closed the curtains in first class to allow one of the pilot to kind of go under in the belly. So then I thought, well, maybe we have a mechanical problem. It's like electrical as well. So anyway, to make a long story short, basically here we are back in Paris, and now it's 6 p.m. in Paris. We had left at 10 in the morning. It's 6 p.m. in Paris, and also, when the cockpit said, made that announcement, nothing was working as far as we used to have those phones on board, know, and everything, and no electronic devices were working anymore after that. So then, again, in our mind, I thought, okay, either a bomb or electrical. So no news whatsoever after that. And we couldn't communicate with anyone. Only when we got to Paris, they opened the door, and then they said, this flight is canceled. So again, we have no clue what happened. Only because one guy in first class called his wife on his cell phone, and his wife said, you cannot believe what's happening in the United States. Right. You know, the towers have exploded in New York, da 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 da. So we all know what happened. So my first thought was like, I need to get out of here ASAP, since I was on standby. And then I thought, I will never be able to. No. You know, my first thought was Canada, because I have family there, but the skies were already closed. And then I look on the board, the next thing was like Africa, Japan, and the next day was like St. Martin Island or Mexico City. So then I thought, okay.
Going to Mexico?
I ended up going to Mexico City. Because I figure at least it's land, it's close to the States.
You could drive.
I could drive. That was my thought. So I bought a one-way ticket, $1,400 on another company, so I could make this flight. But this whole shebang took me 3 hours to buy the ticket, because
that same day you didn't leave the airport.
And I didn't leave the airport that same day. But I had spoken to my companion, and he said, you need to get out of Europe. You never know what can happen now in Europe. You're going to have as well all the diplomats trying to get out. Anyway. So
I'm surprised you could get to Mexico.
Oh, wait. The next day, here I am again at the airport. And I'm going for Mexico City. And I recognized some of the other first class passengers who were there, and they did the same thing. And so at that point, even them, you know, no cars could be found in the United States to rent, rent or anything like that. But one of the gentlemen had offered me to go to Phoenix, Arizona, because his wife was going to meet him at the border, and they could, you know, I could go there. But in my mind, it was like, okay, just go one step at a time and just go forward. So anyway, I took that long flight, 14 hours,
to
Mexico City. I arrived there late at night, and then I got the hotel that was inside the airport. And then right there was a travel agent that could help me out to see how I could get closer to the border. Because from Mexico to, it was basically Laredo, Texas. So that's why I had to go. So I took Air Mexico another airline, Mexicana.
Mexicana.
I got to the border. And then when I got to the border, there was about four taxis. And here I'm seeing that last taxi is going out with one guy in it. And I figure I'm not going to miss that taxi, because he's the one going through the border. All
right,
so I knocked on the taxi.
He already had a passenger, right?
Yeah, he already had a passenger, but I figured this guy is going to move because I'm going with him. So I get in a taxi with him, and so this guy is telling me the story. He's going to Indiana. And so he had a car from Indiana, because his house was Chicago. But anyway, he said, I said, well, how are you going to, go from here to Indiana? He said, with Greyhound. So I said, oh, well, I'll go with you. So we ended up, we passed the border of Mexico, no problem with the taxi, and we go to the Greyhound bus. And me, I was living in Orlando. And so I said to the girl, well, how much is Orlando one-way ticket? And she goes, $99. So I go, okay. And I said, when am I going to be there? She goes, 4 days later. Okay. So I'm going, okay, 4 days later, okay, going for it.
It so, only cost $99 for 4 days.
Yeah, but it's quite an extraordinary 4 days. Now, listen to that. So, of course, I passed all the border states before I finally ended up to Florida. So those are like Greyhound buses like that just stop for either do a number one. I've never seen any places where there was hot food other than those kind of, you know, those sausages that they roll over all day long, and then you have the grease dripping out of them. So that was one of the choices that you could have as a hot
meal. I have to also
say,
you're French, right? So you have high expectations for food. I guess that didn't pass the muster.
No, but I remember it. But quite frankly, every time you would see the shabbiest place in whatever city we would go by, with the sign, I was kind of dangling, the sign of the Greyhound bus, it was dangling or just ready to fall. That was the Greyhound station. And that's where you would go in there, those rolling sausages, or you had that food that had been sitting there for like days. And then you had vending machines, but wait a minute, they were behind the counter. And then at that lovely counter, the hostess that was there was like either a toothless woman, you know, that had not brushed her hair for about 5 days, and she had those checkered shirt on, you know, with jeans, and she would just about chew tobacco and then ask me like, you want anything? And it was like, oh my God. And then drink, it was either like you had to get something to eat or go to the bathroom, because that bus driver was like a warden. He would say, 20 minutes, you know. And then you had the third bunch that was smoking. So come to find out that these poor guys couldn't smoke the whole cigarette, all right? So they had cigarette butts every ground station. So then come to find out that we knew why there were so many hobos waiting for the Greyhound bus.
They wanted the cigarettes.
Because they wanted to get the butts of the cigarettes that were left over, all right? So this is not first class. This is not quite first class. It's all the, and again, we're rolling like day and night, you know, nonstop. It was so disgustingly dirty, you know, and unbelievably smelly. So by that time, I was feeling like
less than fresh.
Yeah, I really needed some French perfume to cover up, but I still had to go. But I finally got to Orlando, and it was pouring rain. And then I told my companion, okay, let me stand in the rain for about 5 minutes, because I am really disgusting. So that was my Greyhound experience. Jeez. After September 11.
And so, you know, people complain to us about, you know, like their TV doesn't work. We should tell them to check out Greyhound.
Oh, they should really check out Greyhound, especially on the border town. Start in Nuevo Laredo and make your trip to Florida. You will have a great experience.
Yeah, don't thank us.
If you're allergic to sausages, well, you're tough luck.
Yeah, those were simpler times, I think. I just feel like we may be going back to that, by the way. But in a way, good, because when I read things like the foundations of capitalism are shattering, I'm like, maybe we need that. Maybe we need some time where we're walking around with a donkey with pots clanging on the sides.
You think that would just bring us back to reality?
Yeah, because everything is amazing right now, and nobody's happy. Like, in my lifetime, the changes in the world have been incredible. When I was a kid, we had a rotary phone. We had a phone that you had to stand next to. and you have to dial it.
Yes.
You realize how primitive, you're making sparks in a phone, and you actually would hate people with zeros in their numbers because it was more,
right.
Like, oh, this guy's got two zeros, screw that guy, why do I want to... And then if they called and you weren't home, the phone would just ring lonely by itself. And then if you wanted money, you had to go in the bank for when yes. It was open for like 3 hours. You had to stand in line, write yourself a check like an idiot. And then when you ran out of money, you just go, well, I can't do any more things now.
Right.
I can't do any more
That's
things.
That's it, yeah.
That was it. And even if you had a credit card, the guy would go, ugh, and he'd bring out this whole chunk, and he'd write,
yes.
Oh, you have to call the president to see if you have any money.
It's all true, kids. You had to call the president, yeah. It was ridiculous.
Yes.
Do you feel that we now, in the 21st century, we take technology for granted?
Well, yeah, because now we live in an amazing, amazing world, and it's wasted on the crappiest generation of just spoiled idiots that don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, ugh. It won't. Give it a second. It's going to space. Can you give it a second to get back from space? Is the speed of light
true?
Yeah. I was on an airplane, and there was internet, high-speed internet on the airplane. That's
yes.
the newest thing that I know exists. And I'm sitting on the plane, and they go, open up your laptop. You can go on the internet. And it's fast, and I'm watching YouTube clips. I'm in an airplane. And then it breaks down, and they apologize, the internet's not working. The guy next to me goes, this is bull. Like, how quickly the world owes him something
yes.
he knew existed only 10 seconds ago.
Right, right.
And on planes... flying is the worst one, because people come back from flights, and they tell you their story. And it's like a horror story. They act like their flight was like a cattle car in the 40s in Germany. That's yeah. how bad they make it sound.
Right.
They're like, it was the worst day of my life. First of all, we didn't board for 20 minutes.
Right.
And then we get on the plane, and they made us sit there on the runway for 40 minutes. We had to sit there. Oh, really? What happened next? Did you fly through the air incredibly like a bird? Did you partake in the miracle of human flight, you non-contributing zero? But you got to fly. You're flying. It's amazing. Everybody on every plane should just constantly be going, oh, my God. Wow.
Yes.
You're flying. You're sitting in a chair in the sky.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't go back a lot. And it's not really... You know, here's the thing. People, like, they say there's delays on flights.
Yeah.
Delays, really? New York to California in 5 hours. That used to take 30 years to do that. And a bunch of you would die on the way there and have a baby. You'd be a whole different group of people by the time you got there. Now you watch a movie and you take a dump and you're home.
Yeah. That was a nicer way to say it than that, but yeah,
no.
I want to thank you guys who went to my website, bettingthesky.com, when you're going to buy something on Amazon. It doesn't cost you anymore, but it supports the show. And I had a particularly good month last month. Somebody bought 6 app-controlled robotic balls. That sounds like fun. I didn't even know they had app-controlled robotic balls. And then somebody else, which I thought was quite apropos for this episode, bought a 14-panel drug test kit. Yep, bought a 14-panel drug test kit. You know, it's like your very own Mr. Peabody from Amazon. Thanks so much. And here's an interesting airline article for you. I commute in and out of Savannah, and I had to go get my parking pass. You don't have to pay for parking. It's no big deal, but you got to go pay for it like once a year. And I was in the offices and I noticed they had pictures of graves on the runway. And I was like, What are those? And I noticed there were more than one pictures of the graves. And they said, oh, you know, that's the graves on the runway. And I was like, the graves on the runway? Because I guess unless you're a pilot, you wouldn't be able to see them. But there's actually graves on the Savannah runway. And then they started telling me all these ghost stories, how they have all these problems with ghosts at the Savannah airport. And I thought that was really kind of coincidental, since, you know, Savannah's known for its ghosts. So the fact that Savannah's airport has ghosts, I thought was equally interesting. And they were so nice, they actually gave me this article. So it says, at peace with the jets, graves at the Savannah International Airport runway are a reminder of the land's former use. Richard Dotson's gravesite marker reads, at rest. Nearby, his wife, Catherine, with a marker reading, gone home to rest. These simple late 19th century messages suggest surviving family members hoped that their forebears would find rest after spending a lifetime laboring to tame what was, at that time at least, a still pretty wild outskirts of Savannah. At 20,000 feet, though, the Dotson's final resting place looks like a giant cross, the intersecting runways of the Savannah International Airport. Since the wartime days of bombers landing at Chatham Field, the airport's first incarnation, through expansions and runway extensions, the Dotson's family wish to keep their patriarch's markers where they are has yielded a unique and yet curious runway feature. Nearly 60 years ago, the Dotson's gravesites became a permanent part of the runway. On the runway! And how did this couple get to spend forever at the airport? The familiar cemetery contained perhaps 100 or more graves, including those of many slaves. But with Europe already embroiled in war, the need to keep civilian air traffic separated from an increasing amount of military planes flying into the area led the construction of Chatham Field. Much of the Dotson properties became part of the airport. The Dotson's great-grandchildren couldn't bring themselves to move their ancestors off land originally obtained by a king's grant. So even though the federal government had a reputation for paving over what it wants to, the urgency of World War II proved to be an ace card for the Dotson family negotiation. The need for B-24 Liberators and B-17 Flying Fortresses to rain bombs on Nazi-controlled Europe far outweighed the prospect of wrangling with the reluctant property owners over a cemetery. So army officials agreed to foot the bill for moving most of the Dotson family cemetery to another cemetery. But Richard and Catherine Dotson, along with the gravesites of John Dotson and Daniel Houston, were left in place. But ever since, the airport staff have honored that arrangement and the family wishes. Since airports typically need large tracts of land that couldn't be found, you know, inside large cities, nearby farmland was commonly used. Moving or working around cemeteries has been a common task for airport officials. But as far as anyone can tell, the airport is the only one with grave markers in the runway. People shouldn't be creeped at this, though, Graham said. When the runway was extended, it was found that really the markers were left on the graves. Plus, since the markers are near the runway shoulder, planes don't really roll over the site, just pass it. Still, squeezed in between jet landings and takeoffs makes for an interesting gravesite visit for family members. They can't just drop in because they need an airport escort. Leaving flowers on graves really isn't an option. It's really a weird feeling to be out there with those graves. Though family members make infrequent visits, the Dotsons are far from being neglected. Sometimes pilots are heard asking the tower control whether those were really grave sites they just passed over on the runway. Other pilots, especially those who haven't been to Savannah before, but have heard the rumors, ask if they could use the runway with the graves just so they could see them. So I read all this later, but I was at the Savannah airport looking at the pictures of the graves, asking the people who worked there. I'm like, what the heck? And they're like, oh, yeah. So ever since they've been there, there's been stories about ghosts at the airport. And they said even the really skeptical people can't explain certain things, like certain pieces of equipment, tractors or automobiles or anything, will turn on without a key being in it. And there'll be like nobody around and they'll just turn on. And like people new to the airport will be like, what the heck? And they're like, oh, it's the ghosts. It's just the ghosts. And you know what? As they were saying, you know, maybe these people aren't that happy that they're supposed to be at rest and they're on a runway at the airport. But, you know, if it is some sort of ghost, I think you really can't blame them you know, for turning on some equipment and scaring some airport workers. Because their gravesites say, you know, at rest, you know, at peace. And I have a feeling most people don't picture at rest or at peace being at the airport.
This man, he gets up out of business late and he goes to the bathroom and I'm like, sir, we're landing, and I'm beating on the door. He didn't come out. So I finally open the door and there he is, passed out on the toilet with his pants around his ankle. I thought, oh my God, he's dead. Yeah. He is dead. I'm like, sir, we're about to land. I mean, we're skimming. I run back to the back. Paul, get up here. There's a man dead on the toilet. He goes, I'm not touching him. I said, Paul, get this man out of the toilet. We're landing. Get this man out of the toilet. He went up to him and he went, Get up! Man goes, and he had his pants around his ankles trying to get back to the Business Elite seat.
I'm like, holy crap.
We thought he was dead.
So we had another big snowstorm. Really long layover in Germany because... Now, you know, things change all the time in the airline business, but now, you know, when there's a big snowstorm, they just proactively cancel flights, and you can end up with, I ended up with a 95-hour layover. 95 hours in Stuttgart. But, you know, since I like to travel, and I like doing things and exploring, it was great. I'd much prefer that than being, you know, trapped somewhere less interesting, or, you know, trapped on a, not being able to get to or from work. So it worked out just fine. So I had this long layover and I just kept taking trains to other little towns near Stuttgart. So I went to Ulm, which was really fun because they had, I like when they have something specific to see, and they had the world's tallest steeple, which I climbed all the way up. Boy, that was a lot of steps, but it was really fun to get above the gargoyles. You know, you're usually looking up at the gargoyles. I got to be above the gargoyles, and I really enjoyed that, beautiful views from up there. And they also had the world's crookedest house. I had to go see the world's crookedest house. And then the next day, I went to Tübingen, and I had gotten a book before I went on this trip, because I was supposed to have a longer than usual layover. I didn't expect it to be 95 hours, but I knew I could take a day trip. So I had got a book, and I had read that there was an interesting castle. They said a turreted castle. You know, I never use the word turret, but they said it has a beautiful turreted castle in Tübingen. So I took the train to Tübingen, and I get off the train, and I see this castle at the top of the hill, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's pretty. It's turreted, has a flag on top. And, you know, just walked going up and up towards that castle that I saw. And I was trying to get in the castle. I went in the entryway, and the kids were looking at me funny. And I thought, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure why they're looking at me funny. I don't know. I just kind of ignored them. Still looking for a way to get in the castle. And it wasn't a castle. It was a house. The kids were looking at me funny because I was trespassing. I didn't know. It looked like a castle. It had turrets. No wonder I couldn't find a way in. I could have really made a big mess. I could have made a huge mess trying to break into these people's house. I stopped a student. It's a college town. And I stopped somebody and I said, hey, where's the castle? And she pointed. It was a complete other direction. And I said, I thought this other place was the castle. And she goes, oh, yeah, a lot of the houses look like castles. And I said, well, it had a big flag on it. Yeah, she goes, yeah, people put a flag. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I just tried to get into somebody's house thinking it was a castle. I did find the real castle. It was fun. I was like an accidental castle trespasser. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel around the world together. Thanks, bye.
she's going. You'll have some fun, so why not come along? Seat belts are fastened for takeoff and the signal is strong. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. She's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heels. She